Good afternoon, dear colleagues. We're going to start our meeting, but first of all, I'd like to start by welcoming two new members to our working group, because the Portuguese Assembly was renewed, and I welcome our two colleagues from Portugal. Welcome to this working group, which is reaching the end of its mission, sadly. But we are impatient to hear what you have to say about this subject, and we're still trying to figure out what form a conclusion is going to take, because this is the last audition hearing meeting that we're going to have. So today we're going to hear two specialists, two academics who are specialists in European affairs, Mr. Christian Kallias, who's professor of public law and European law at the Free University of Berlin, and Mr. Daniel Inerarity, who's professor of philosophy at the University of Zaragoza. Mr. Inerarity, however, was unable to join us because we changed the time of this meeting, but he has sent us a video, and we can address our questions to him by email, and he will be able to respond to them. So let's start off with this video message, and then we'll move to Mr. Christian Kallias, who will have about 10 minutes for his presentation, and then we'll have a question answer session as usual. And of course, if you have questions for Mr. Inerarity, perhaps your administration, your teams can transfer your questions, send us your questions, and we will send them across to Mr. Inerarity. And on Interaxio's behest, if you wish to take the floor, you can click on the chat button that you can find on the right of your screen, and you can also use this chat function to solve any technical issues, if any. So I'm going to turn to the technical team to launch the video sent by Mr. Inerarity, please.
The Treaty of the Parliaments, because it introduces many considerations about representative democracy and the role that parliaments exercise within it, urging collaboration between the European Parliament and the parliaments of the member states. As you know, this declaration has not managed to deactivate the complaint that we are witnessing in general, but more particularly in the European Union, a progressive weakening of parliaments, a process in the face of which there have been proposals to include member state parliaments in European decision-making, as well as increasing the powers of the European Parliament. My hypothesis, developed in my book, The Democracy of Europe, is that the possibilities of reparliamentarization of the EU are limited. But there are various innovative ways to think about representative duties. The expectation that informs this proposal is that greater, the proposal of the Lisbon Treaty, is that greater intervention by current parliaments would help increase the democratic legitimacy of the Union. The new structure of the Lisbon Treaty helped national parliaments stop being mere victims of integration and become protagonists. The amendments introduced in the Lisbon Treaty involve the national parliaments as guardians of subsidiarity in the European legislative process. They are given the role of early warning system to make sure the principle of subsidiarity is being respected. The scope of this expectation is disputed. In any case, although the powers that parliaments are granted are rather limited and exceptional, this would establish what some have called a multi-level parliamentary field, a space of interaction between the parliaments that share the task of representing Europeans in the Union's decision-making process. However, this is my point of view regarding this issue. I share the opinion of many researchers that are quite skeptical about the early warning system. In the first place, because the system ignores the fact that the parliamentary majority rarely adopts a position that is different from the government. In member states, the principal cleavage is the division between the government and the opposition, not the division between the government and the parliamentary majority. For this reason, it is uncommon for the government and the parliamentary majority to hold different positions, which makes it unlikely that a state parliament would represent a position that is different than what is government maintains in the council. On the other hand, it is worth noting that this practice would mean a weakening of deliberative abilities at the European level. In the literature that analyzes the rise of co-decision between parliaments and their executives, the Danish Folketing, the Danish parliament, is used as an example, as you know, since it has the ability to give their government a binding mandate for negotiations. In general, national parliaments only have the ability to adopt not binding resolutions about European matters, except in Denmark and Austria, where they are binding. Even though the responsibility and control the Danish parliament has over European affairs is laudable, their binding mandate prevents open deliberation about their decisions within the European Union. The parliamentarization of the European Union does not necessarily make it more democratic in the sense of making it more deliberative. Strengthening the role of the national parliaments might constrain the position of governments, making them restrict their negotiating position, so the parliament has no room to maneuver. This might make the Union's institutional framework more connected to the national voter, but less predisposed to transnational understandings. The incorporation of national parliaments would mean increasing national legitimacy when what is needed is, in my opinion, greater legitimacy on the European level. We don't need parliamentary aggregation, but parliamentary emergence. The solution is not to connect with the voters we already have, but with the transnational lines of thought that should arise from our practices. To encourage greater integration, parliaments should not only think about red lines, subsidiarity, and specific interests, but also in terms of how they can make a positive contribution to the process of European integration. There is another and final reason for the unlikelihood of involving parliaments in the Union's major issues, a reason that has a functional nature of customs and political culture. State parliaments are not prepared to internalize the concerns of the other states or to articulate a form of solidarity with them. Unlike government leaders, parliamentarians are not accustomed to justifying decisions adopted at the European level before their own electorate. A greater salience of the EU-wide issues in national parliaments would only stir national party competition without any structural countervailing force to induce a fair consideration of the interests of the rest of the European population. If there is a deficit of representation on the European level, greater involvement of the national parliaments, this is my opinion, could not improve things, and it is not likely that this qualification would give them greater importance. For this reason, it is not exaggerated to affirm that national parliaments will continue being rather weak actors in the union's political systems. Thank you very much.
Very well then. I'm going to now hand over the floor to Mr. Christian Kellies, who is online with us. I can see him online. Could you please turn on your mic and your camera as well, please?
And my micro, can you see okay. me now? Problem. So I will I send it to you in France as well, so you have it at least after my speech. Okay, so I, in order, because we don't want to lose time, I just give the presentation right now without PowerPoint presentation. First of all, subsidiarity, the principle of subsidiarity and proportionality is an important key element for national parliaments, according to Article 5 and 12 of the treaty. Because the respect of subsidiarity and proportionality means that national parliaments keep their competences. If national parliaments, according to Article 12 of the treaty and Protocol number 1 and 2, are an efficient guardian of the respect of the principles of subsidiarity and proportionality, they ensure at the same time that their competences are respected, their competences as a national parliament. Therefore, the efficient application of subsidiarity on European and national level is a key element. In order to make, but there are of course problems with the efficient application on European and national level, as we all know. In order to make the principles of subsidiarity and proportionality better work, I propose a bundle of measures. These measures are part of a new working method that is based on the white paper on the future of Europe from 2017 presented by the former Juncker Commission. There was a scenario, you may remember that there were five scenarios, and there was one scenario proposing a new working method more efficiently and doing less more efficiently. So on the one hand, with subsidiarity, it's important to concentrate on political priorities. This is close to Macron's proposals on sovereignty, because such priorities, as well as those as Macron proposed, they define political priorities on European level. And in these priorities, the European Union should be strong and efficient. But at the same time, in other policy fields that are not priorities, the European Union can do less. How can the European Union do less? In this regard, the principle of subsidiarity is an important key element. And this was accepted by the Juncker Commission as well. And they established a task force on subsidiarity and proportionality in 2018 that presented in 2018 a report that then, with a lot of proposals for doing less, and this report was then part of the conference on subsidiarity in Bregenz by the Austrian presidency in 2018. And in 2018, there was presented a kind of conclusion on that, subsidiarity as a building instrument of the European Union. And some of my proposals are part of this or are overlapping and part of this document of Bregenz. First of all, national parliaments can save competences if the European Union is refraining from exercise certain powers where there are no priorities. In policy fields where no political priorities, the European Union should refrain from exercising certain powers. So these powers and competences are with the national parliaments. This can be done without major amendments to the legal framework, just a political decision. Moreover, from my point of view, it seems very important to establish a kind of culture of subsidiarity on the European level and with the member states. And this means that we have to develop a common language on subsidiarity and proportionality, what we understand exactly by subsidiarity and what we understand by proportionality. Because right now, every member state and as well as the European institution understand very different, have very different ideas, let it say like this, about the principle of subsidiarity. Therefore, it is important that we establish a kind of subsidiarity grid. This was proposed as well by the task force of 2018 and the paper of Bregenz. I think this subsidiarity grid, which was then picked up by the European Commission in its communication of 2018, seems to me very important to develop this subculture of a common culture of subsidiarity in the European Union. We really should, and I think the committee of regions as well agreed to that, that we should develop, maybe on this basis of the Commission proposal in its communication, a common subsidiarity grid in order to have a common language on subsidiarity. Moreover, it seems to me that the consultation by the Commission in the preparatory phase of legal acts could be improved, and the Commission is ready for that. That even before a proposal is tabled, the Commission should make participation of national parliaments possible. So an early kind, a special kind of very early consultation by the Commission before the proposal of the legislative act is tabled. And then the proposal could be evaluated according to Protocol 1 and 2 of the treaty. But we should have a special subsidiarity sheet. And this subsidiarity sheet as a document, as a living document, should be part of the whole legislative process, and every institution involved in the legislative process should add comments on subsidiarity during this process. In the light of the comments of the national parliaments, according to Protocol 1 and 2. So this special subsidiarity sheet should be part of the proposal of the Commission and be along the whole process of legislation. And if the subsidiarity grid is binding for all institutions, and we have then a common language on subsidiarity based on the criteria of Article 5, then we will have a discussion. This makes a discussion possible on the criteria of subsidiarity with regard to the legislative proposal. Moreover, subsidiarity and proportionality should be strengthened in the framework of Protocol Number 1. So I'm in favor that the yellow card procedure should require the Commission to forward its proposal together with the subsidiarity sheet as soon as possible to national parliaments. So this makes it possible for national parliaments to raise concerns regarding the proposal as early as possible. Moreover, assigning a green card to national parliaments to assign them a positive role seems important to me. I'm much in favor of this green card, because then not the yellow and red card procedure on the European level, which is more a negative role of national parliaments. By a green card, they could have, in addition, a positive role. So this means as well an opportunity to introduce subsidiarity concerns by suggesting new legislation or a revision, abrogation of existing legislation to the Commission. Of course, we should think then about a certain threshold at a level of 1/3 or 1/4 of national parliaments for this green card. Moreover, I could imagine that we create a platform, on European level, responsible for subsidiarity, bringing together all the expertise in the institutions as well as in the national parliaments on European level in order to enhance the process and to improve the subsidiarity grid and the subsidiarity procedure. This should be a subsidiarity board that is then consulting the improvement of the process of subsidiarity from the beginning, from the subsidiarity grid to the subsidiarity sheet. Subsidiarity boards might help to find, based on the subsidiarity grid, a common language on European level by participation of all actors in legislation. Finally, I would like to give some hints on proportionality. In this regard, I would say that we should establish and agree on a legislative toolbox. So, in general terms, the European Union could work closer to citizens by confining European legislation to minimum standards, introduce opt-up clauses, or more a result-based approach that permits greater flexibility to member states and national parliaments in the framework of directives. There are a lot of tools in this toolbox, and I listed them in my paper. I just want to mention that, for example, legislation could allow for the consideration of alternative, less burdensome solutions. It could be more focused on outcomes instead of prescribing the exact mechanism by which compliance is obtained. Further, legislation could include a so-called right to challenge. Legislation could be based on benchmarking and best practices. There should be an ex post evaluation of legislation, and we could think of sunset clauses. Maybe in the discussion I can come back on this if you are interested. To conclude, in the next step, I think it's very important to agree that the European Union should concentrate on political priorities, and in other policy fields where are no priorities, subsidiarity and proportionality should play a much stronger role than right now. Moreover, we should think in the next step to establish this interinstitutional platform within subsidiarity board that can scan competences to repatriate and re-evaluate existing legislation on the European level, and at the same time improve the process of subsidiarity between the institutions, including the subsidiarity grid. Because it's so important to agree on a common language and culture on subsidiarity based on this grid. I think then the process would be much more constructive on implementing subsidiarity. And by the way, the control of subsidiarity would become easier because the European Court of Justice in control of subsidiarity could refer to the subsidiarity grid and the criteria mentioned in it. For the moment, I would like to thank you, and I'm ready to answer your questions now in the discussion. Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup for the invitation. Thank you.
Merci, professeur, avant de
Many thanks to you, Professor. Before giving the floor to my colleagues for questions, I would like to come back to the subsidiarity grid. It's an interesting concept. Have you already established an example, a model, something that could be the starting point of a reflection process in the member states?
Question to me? Or is it in to the?
Non, c'est une question pour vous, professeur.
Yes, please, a question for you, because you are the one who mentioned this concept.
Yes, we have already the Commission, as I mentioned, if I understood your question correctly, the Commission already proposed, based on the work of the task force on subsidiarity, which was led then by Vice President Timmermans of the Commission. And this task force established this report in 2018. And based on this, the Commission adapted this subsidiarity grid that was proposed by the task force. And this grid is, from my point of view, very, very helpful as a starting point, at least, to create this common language of subsidiarity. This would be my proposal, that we use this existing grid, because this is agreed by the Commission, and this is was worked out by the task force of the Commission, the Timmermans task force in 2018, that involved already national parliaments and regions. Did I answer your question correctly? Because I had no translation at the moment. I'm sorry. So, and my French is... best for the moment.
No. Pour l'interprétation, vous l'avez en haut.
So, interpretation, you will find on the top right-hand side, left-hand side, bottom left-hand side, and you can choose the channel that you want to listen to. So apparently it's at the top. You have probably selected floor, and you have to click on the language that you want to hear.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I did hear your answer, though, and this proposal that was made has not evolved, apparently.
Bien. Mes chers collègues. Oui, allez-y, professeur.
Yeah, this is the problem. I mean, the Austrian presidency had the subsidiary. Subsidiarity conference in Bregenz, and there the kind of document of Bregenz, subsidiarity is the building principle of the
European Professor, Union. On ne vous entend plus vraisemblablement, les interprètes ne vous entendent
and
plus.
There was a hope that the Austrian president...
Est-ce que votre micro est allumé?
...and bring it forward. But in 2018, the Austrian presidency made not a priority of this. They did not follow the process further. They did not follow the process further, exactly. This process was then more or less stopped. There was not enough support from the member states. But the idea was that the European Council should agree to this subsidiarity document, including the subsidiarity grid, and then
merci. Alors, subsidiarity
document of the Europeans, it's a subsidiarity grid. Should be developed to the subsidiarity grid and the subsidiarity document of Bregenz. This was the idea, should be the basis for a proposal of the European Council for an interinstitutional agreement.
Merci. Merci beaucoup. Alors, je prends tout de suite une question.
Thank you very much. We have a question. Mr. Markus Staunz from the Bundestag wanted to ask a question. Markus Staunz, please switch on your mic and camera. And when you click on it, the button will turn red. This was almost it.
Für diese Sitzung heute. Vielen Dank auch den Referenten heute. Möchte nochmal betonen, dass das ein ganz wichtiges Thema ist, gerade vor dem Hintergrund, dass wir gerade in dieser Krise, in der sich Europa jetzt befindet, glaube ich, auch seine institutionellen
I believe that we should focus.
Vielen Dank, Professor Kallis, auch nochmal für Ihre Ausführungen. Sie haben in Ihren Ausführungen ja auch erwähnt, dass im Bereich der Subsidiarität auch die
Subsidiarity, the Committee of the Regions tabled a statement and that it welcomed this type of proposal. My question is about the acceptance of the decision-making competence on the part of the different European institutions. From your point of view, should we also involve the regions of Europe? Because the Committee of the Regions only has the possibility to provide comments. It has to be heard, it has to be consulted, it could also refuse to be consulted, but it doesn't have any veto right. I would not grant any veto right to the Committee of the Regions, but still I believe that we could allocate a certain word to it so that it has a say in order to more strongly influence legislation at a European level in order to make for greater acceptance amongst the populations of the regions. I don't know whether my colleagues share this opinion, but the particular acceptance for decisions made at a European level is hard to reach, and it is something that is hard to explain to the regions. But policymaking has to be explained to the voters. Maybe you can comment on that aspect. Let me thank you for the time being. Thank you so much, Mr. Tones, for your question. Let me apologize to the interpreters. I did not realize that you might have heard your own translation in the backdrop when I spoke, and there was some sort of an echo, and I'm sorry for that. I'm going to keep talking in German, responding to this question in German. For sure, the role of the Committee of the Regions is very important when it comes to subsidiarity. And I believe, beside the national parliaments, the Committee of the Regions at a European level is of utmost importance, because national parliaments only have a tool which is subsidiarity reprimand and subsidiarity lawsuits, but the Committee of the Regions has to be heard. And to my mind, the Committee of the Regions also fulfills the function of being a guardian of subsidiarity, amongst other roles. But this, in turn, would require joint a common language of subsidiarity and a joint subsidiarity grid. So for us to know what we're talking about, and the Committee of the Regions would then have to be prepared to join in. And there was a very intense discussion on that matter. It would have to be prepared to adhere to the criteria of the subsidiarity grid and to resort to it whilst fulfilling its role as a subsidiarity guardian, because the Committee of the Regions should, in this case, to my mind, be strengthened. I believe we could actually consider this idea of equipping the Committee of the Regions to a greater extent. Because, I mean, it is about looking into subsidiarity and proportionality of European measures, and the Committee of the Regions should be strengthened, going beyond the mere role of being consulted and heard. Maybe not in the shape of a red card, but maybe we could think of an orange card, possibly, to be granted to the Committee of the Regions combined with a green card. Of course, this is something that's already possible when enjoying the right to be heard, and the Committee of the Regions could also, as of now, put forward suggestions for improvements, but we should strengthen it further, and I would be very much in favor of this approach. And all the more so when it's about subsidiarity matters, because national parliaments, and I just pointed this out in my talk, can only partly influence European legislative acts within the framework of subsidiarity reprimands. And here I believe it is important that they agree on a common language of subsidiarity whilst resorting to the subsidiarity grid. Only then we will know that we're talking about the same thing, that we're all on the same page. And let me cut this short. I'm going to leave it at that. Thank you.
Many thanks to you. The floor is to our colleague, Mr. Iglesias. Miguel Iglesias, you have the floor.
Good afternoon. I would like to greet the French presidency and Senator Jean-François Rapin and commend you, sir, for the great work and effort that has been done on the last few months at COSAC meetings in order to improve and perfect the role of national parliaments in the European Union, for which we are sure there will be specific proposals that will ensure also specific results in the future. We agree in general with the summary conclusions of the past meetings, with the contribution of the esteemed and respected guests and lecturers, and would like to reinforce the idea that we should improve the interparliamentary relations and cooperation without increasing the bureaucracy, the complexity on the levels of decision and appeal. Otherwise, we will distance ourselves even more from the needs of the people we represent, and also having in regard the short human resources of some of the national parliaments. I would like to underline in this COSAC meeting the importance that the various working groups should also give to the outermost regions of the European Union, many times forgotten in these discussion forums, as they have autonomy and their own parliament, so that we do not distance them even more from the interparliamentary decisions we make, particularly in the COSAC initiatives. As elected by the autonomous region of Madeira, the island of Madeira, this is something I would like to be considered by this working group, and I'm sure the French presidency, as a great country with outermost regions, will also greatly understand. Either including the outermost regions' parliaments in the informal meetings, or also being able to do questions to the Commission, either through COSAC or directly, I hope COSAC does not forget the outermost regions of Europe. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your contribution. Obviously, the objective is not to oversaturate the administrative and technical means that various parliaments have, but rather to smoothen these processes, because our duty is to be in contact with citizens and to bring answers to their questions. I have Ms. Galizia from Italy who would like the floor. Thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank the professor for his presentation, which was very interesting. And I also would like to commend the other video that we listened to. I'd like to go back to the point of subsidiarity that the professor was teaching. What would be this body's profile, and how would this body function? Thank you. Professor, the floor is yours.
Dankeschön. Gut, dass Sie da noch, gut, dass Sie da noch mal nachfragen. Insoweit ist es, glaube ich, dass es mir nicht um ein neues Institution ging, sondern mehr um eine, Sie sprechen, glaube ich, das Subsidiarity Board an, das ich kurz skizziert hatte. Und da war ich vielleicht nicht deutlich genug. Ich habe das nur kurz erwähnt. Mir geht es um eine gemeinsame.
Not make myself clear enough.
Bewegung zur Subsidiarität, den ganzen, die Rolle von Subsidiarität im Gesetz.
Role of subsidiarity in the legislative process, and this is something that needs to be discussed over and again in order to be able to inform the process at the European level with regard to subsidiarity. For example, by using the subsidiarity grid. And in order to maybe also improve this subsidiarity grid and also the subsidiarity sheet that might be accompanying the legislative act. With this, we could start an exchange and interaction of institutions in order to find out what we can improve. Because I think that within the principle of subsidiarity and also within the subsidiarity procedure, there are many elements where we can always try and learn and find out more. And the subsidiarity board could maybe try and explain whenever there are things that are unclear and might also try and find a solution. On that subsidiarity board, we should have representatives of the national parliaments, of the EU Commission, and of the European Parliament. This is what I believe, as well as representatives from the Committee of the Regions. So all the institutions that are also part of the legislative procedure, but instead of the members of the Council, the national parliaments would be represented. So no ministers on the subsidiarity board. National parliaments would then send their representatives to the board, and it might be enough to have 2 meetings per year, maybe 4 meetings per year, in order to get this work done. And maybe it would also be good if the subsidiarity board had a secretariat that could support the work of the board, or maybe the work of the commission or the committee of regions might also make available such a secretariat. I know this is so important also to make the work of national parliaments easier and coordinate the actors in the European realm. So the subsidiarity board would be a new informal institution that would go beyond the interinstitutional agreement, but could be created based on that interinstitutional agreement. It could serve as a platform of coordination of the different actors in the legislative process with regard to subsidiarity and proportionality. That would be my idea. Thank you.
Merci, professeur. Alors, je vois.
Thank you very much. Igor Pimenov is asking for the floor, so I'm going to give it to him. Igor, the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the presentation. But I would like just to reiterate the question which I have asked at the previous meeting of the working group. A national parliament is not an indivisible atom. It has its internal structure. There is a government coalition, a pro-government coalition, and there are opposition MPs. And they represent different interests. Sometimes their position is absolutely different to, if compared to the position of the government MPs or pro-government MPs. But in the final outset, the parliament by the takes a decision by voting, and as the result of this voting is practically the opinion of the government rather than the MPs, which are absolutely different, as I've told you. So my question is, you as a scholar, do you take into account that this particular circumstance, whether the consideration on the development of the subsidiarity mechanism in the future European Union take into account the internal structure of parliaments? It's very important. Me, as an opposition MP, I'm facing this challenge practically every week. So what is your opinion, sir? Thank you so much.
Wichtige Frage in diesem Zusammenhang.
I believe it is of utmost importance that for this we should focus on the mandate of the subsidiarity complaint and subsidiarity action. By the treaty, national parliaments have the competence to check and control the proportionality, the subsidiarity, and the competence, whether the EU has the competence to act, whether the measure suggested is in line with the principle of subsidiarity and proportionality. So those are the three questions that can become part of the subsidiarity complaint and also subsidiarity action. They can be assessed by the national parliaments, and this is a role ascribed to them in Article 12 and Protocol 1 and 2. So now I'm coming to your question. I believe that we need to first of all carry out a subsidiarity control in the form of this subsidiarity grid. The subsidiarity grid will provide the criteria according to Article 5 of the EU Treaty pertaining to subsidiarity, because in this article it says that the member states cannot become active effectively, and this is why the European Union can do this better, and therefore the measure suggested by the Commission needs to be proportionate. That is then passed into legislation. So, based on that subsidiarity grid and applying the criteria of the subsidiarity grid and using them as our argument, when we do this, it does not really play a role whether you're in the opposition or in the government, because these criteria are objective criteria that can be used as a line of argumentation. Then you can say, in this area, the member states can become sufficiently effective and active, and this is why it is not needed for the European level to take action. So these would be the lines of argumentation, and the criteria are in the subsidiarity grid. And those arguments can be raised by the government or by the opposition, but at the end of the day, it is the national parliaments. The criteria are politically neutral. And the arguments that you could then use as an opposition or a government, the political arguments that are guided by the criteria of the subsidiarity grid, they might differ. But then, of course, you have the typical political debate at the national level, but also at the European level. What is important is that the political arguments should always refer to the criteria of the subsidiarity grid. The major benefit, and let me just add this as a footnote, independently of your very important question. The benefit is that the Commission can respond much better to the concerns of the parliaments, because if the concerns of the parliaments are voiced using the criteria of the subsidiarity grid, the Commission will say, okay, this is not a purely political argument, but the member state, the national parliament, is tabling an argument which is based on the criteria of the subsidiarity grid. I was not able to talk about the criteria, but these are legal criteria derived from the norms of Article 5. And then they are specified. And therefore, they are a good platform and basis for argumentation to find out whether the member states cannot become effectively active or sufficiently active, and this is why the European Union has to take action. And I believe that those criteria can be improved by the subsidiarity board, and maybe also in the context of your discussion here, because I believe this is so important for the future of the European Union. So maybe you can even improve the subsidiarity grids. Because the criteria of the communication of the Commission, they are not perfect. The criteria contained in the report of the task force, they are not perfect, and you can make them more specific. So I suggested that maybe the subsidiarity board could also assume a very important role in this context, because I believe that the subsidiarity grid is a living document, one that can be approved in an ongoing process. But what is most important is that we agree in Europe, between Brussels and the member states, agree on one common language of subsidiarity using common criteria. Because when we speak about subsidiarity, I see that very often we don't speak the same language. And I think with this, I've also answered your question with regard to the role of opposition and government in national parliaments. If you're talking about the same thing with the same language, then I believe that you can also have an effective argument between the opposition and the government on whether the EU should take action or not. Thank you. I hope I answered your question.
I'm just going to remind you that if you have any questions for Mr. Professor Inirarity, you can send your questions to my team, the administrative team, and my team will transfer those questions to Professor Inirarity. So we've had an hour-long meeting. Thank you, Professor, for your contribution. It was very interesting. And thank you, dear colleagues, for your participation. And I'm just going to give you two or three pieces of information. We have three meetings left. The two next meetings will be dedicated to try and outline a common proposal before the last meeting, which will be held in Paris on the 14th of June. But in the meantime, we're going over all of the contributions, all of the auditions, the hearings, and your remarks. And we're trying to come up with a common proposal, which, of course, we will present to you in the next couple of meetings. And the objective, of course, is to come up with a common report at the end of this working group. So if there are no more requests for the floor, I'm going to say we'll see all of you again on the 16th of May. Thank you, everybody.
Merci beaucoup pour l'invitation. I sent the PowerPoint for
Oui, la présentation va être transmise à tous les membres.
The presentation will be sent to all of the members of the working group. Thank you. Thank you very much and goodbye.